Hey, everybody. Hello. We are Women of Destruction. Andriana Pateras, Spoon Popkin, Rob Girardi, and me, Shirley Hale Kozlowski. We were a band that started in 1990. Basically, it was me, Spoon, and Andriana got together to play music that we didn't know how to play, basically. Like, we didn't know what instruments we were playing. We were just like, let's pick up this instrument and let's just see what happens. So we...
I'd gotten an accordion at a yard sale.
Spoon played accordion.
I started with a Nigerian African drum.
Correct. You were a percussionist and also Balinese. Gamelan. Yeah. And then I was playing bass. I stole my boyfriend Steve Burson's bass and was playing his bass and didn't know what I was doing. So anyway, that's how we started. Andriana, what were we about?
So Shirley was this amazing songwriter, musician, artist who'd been in a band, False Face Society, that I adored. And so I would just follow them around and we became friends. Spoon is this amazing artist, performance artist. And these two had so much creative energy that there's no way that we didn't explode. They were tremendous. And Rob was a guitar player.
He was like our real musician.
Yeah, he was. Well, you were too. Shirley was too. Don't let her fool you. And so Rob, as an honorary member of WAD, he didn't give a fuck about anything. And so he wore dresses. We put him in dresses. Anything from silver lamé, 60s go-go dresses, fishnets, nightgowns.
It was fun. They used to, you know, they would dress me up, and do my makeup and stuff. So it was fun.
It was fun. Yeah. And so I had never done anything like this before, and they wanted me to be the singer, one of the singers. Shirley was a singer, and I didn't want to be a singer. And then they wanted me to play guitar, and I really didn't want to do that. I only knew, like, three chords. But then Rob took me guitar shopping, and down on Eastern Avenue at a pawn shop, we found, like, the most amazing American-made Fender Lead 2 that was really rare, and it must have had a problem with the finish because it had a crackle finish, and they just thought it was, like, a total piece of crap guitar, and we got it for, like, $70. And Mission to Burma was the only other guy who had one. And then he hooked me up with this amazing Fender basement cabinet, and we were...
78 basement 70.
Yeah, it was tremendous. So anyway, so the one thing was is that we really like to play really loud. We like to scream really loud, and we really like to have a good time. And I remember once we were in our practice space in Shirley's house in Bolton Hill, and the whole place was just all these, like, really nasty hanging carpets all around.
Soundproofing.
And there's, like, this hand that comes through the curtain, and this face peers in, and it's a policeman who's been called for a noise disturbance. And when he comes in and he sees us, he's like, what is going on?
He was very perplexed.
Very, very, very perplexed. So that was us. So yeah. We also like to be really, you know, we were all about, like, girl power, women power, being provocative, being really obscene, really funny. Our very first show at our house, we made this huge paper mache bloody tampon that we hung from the ceiling. And it was great.
We also had a friend of ours named Mitchell Valiant who we got him to spit fire over top of 500 people in the Our House,
and
naked.
But he was naked.
Naked. While we were doing a rap song, he was stripping and then spit fire over time. We were like, whoa!
Wow.
Like, oh, my God, yeah. It was amazing times. Yeah.
Not at all a fire hazard. No one could have died in an inferno in there.
Andriana also went to, at the time, she was going to UMBC and studying, doing women's studies. So she was coming back to us, me and Spoon, and being like, I learned all about this thing and this thing. And we were like, what? Oh, my God. So me and Spoon are like, let's write lyrics. Yeah. Let's write lyrics. So we're like totally into like writing these.
That's why one of our big hit singles was PVI is a lie, which stands for penile vaginal intercourse. And I know it. At one point, I did have a woman come to the show with her daughters, and we would put all of the lyrics to our songs in all of our cassette tapes. And she told us that she read all the lyrics with her daughters, and she was just so excited that she could share all of this like political, funny, feminist stuff with her daughters and teach them important things about women in life.
Yeah.
It's like, all right.
Yeah. We tried. We tried. So in 93, we decided we were going to go on this five-week tour, and Spoon primarily was booking the tour, so you can talk about how you booked it.
Well, when you booked a tour in 1993, of course, there are no cell phones, there's no internet. When you were going to call a club, they would be like, if you were going to play at CBGB's, you'd call Louise. She's there on Tuesdays from 3 to 5. There's also no call waiting. There's no answering machines. There's nothing. So you'd go to the Radio Shack, and you'd get this little device that would play the sounds of coins, and you would use a payphone nearby your house where you could stand there using the little thing that makes the sounds of coins because you're broke and long-distance calling is expensive, and you'd call over and over and over and over again till you managed to get through.
Yep. You'd have to mail letters.
Free tour. Yeah, you'd have to physically mail packages and hope that they followed up with you on that. It was pretty
insane.
And
then Rob was like our cash cow because he worked at Kinko's. So he was like our paper person.
Yeah, there was a period of time when anyone who was in a band would come in, and even if I didn't know them, I would give. I'd be like, they'd print like 200 flyers, and I'd be like, that's 40 cents, please. And they'd be like,
oh. So good, so good. Yeah. So in September of 1993, we booked this five-week tour. And the first day of the tour, our first date was at CBGB's in New York City. And we go there, and Joan Jett shows up and hangs out with us backstage for like an hour. Yeah. And we're like, we have it on film. We videotape this, and it was amazing. So we're like, oh, my God, this tour is going to be amazing. It's going to be awesome. Like, this is incredible.
I think it was were we doing a sound check, and Rob was getting ready to do this really crazy solo, and he turns around, and Joan Jett's standing there in the doorway.
I just freaked the fuck out and stopped playing pretty much.
And then when she was backstage with us, all she could talk about was Orioles and Lungfish. Yeah. The band Lungfish. She loved Lungfish.
She was a really, really great Baltimore supporter. And I know all night long I was like, I want to buy Joan Jett a drink. But she always had a drink. So like, that couldn't happen. And at the time I had knee-length green dreadlocks. And so Joan Jett was like, oh, my God, your hair is so amazing. So I was like, Joan, do you want to know what it feels like to have this hair? And she's like, sure. And I'm like, I tell her to bend over. And I mount Joan Jett from behind and put my hair over her head.
And she's like, oh. It's on film.
I just found out that there's film. I didn't know. It's so exciting. So that's the first night of tour. We're like, this has got to be great.
Yeah, we're freaking
but
out.
I want to tell the quick point about our other celebrity moment on that tour, which was in Detroit at the IROC, which is like a Hammerjacks type club, only in Detroit. So it's uber Hammerjacks. I think the women's room had all plastered naked pictures of women.
Yes.
For the whole bathroom. And I don't know if the men's room was all men.
Yeah. No, the reverse.
Like, like so, centerfold.
Yeah, okay. In the girls' room, it was all, yeah,
so,
men.
So there's virtually nobody there, but shockingly, there's a handful of women who are there to see us. So we're playing our show. It's nobody wants to see, other than these handful of women, no one wants to see this arty feminist crap in Detroit. And we're playing our show, and halfway through a song, everybody just gets up and walks out. And we finish playing that song, they cut the sound, they turn on the lights, and we're like, what did we do? And it turned out during the song, over the PA, they had announced that Lemmy was hanging out at a club down the street.
Yeah.
So, show's over.
All right, so we make our way out to Des Moines, Iowa, to a club called Harry Mary's. And we're opening for a band called Pop Defect, which were sweethearts. They were awesome.
Very nice.
Loved them. But the only problem was that's all we were playing to, and like the bartender and the sound person. So there was like 10 people or so there, and a few other people, local people. So we're playing the show, and it was Rob's night to find us
Rob's
lodging.
Night to find a place to stay.
It was my night to find a place to stay. We'd sleep on people's floors, and they always
not
had an
like,
easy time finding a floor to stay on.
Yeah, but, which was surprising with Peter. They stayed in hotels.
How'd you guys do that?
Not
Where
once.
Peter?
None.
Anyway. So there's like, and I see this guy, and he's like, was into the music, and he was like this kind of punk rock looking guy, and I was like, all right. And he's like, yeah, you can stay at our house. It's cool. We live close by. We're in Iowa. And so I get in the truck with him, and then his buddy gets in the van. And so we're driving, and as soon as we get in the van, I didn't really get a good look at him. He just starts blasting some, like, really, like, teeny hardcore. And I start listening to the music, and I realize that he's playing, like, Screwdriver really loud. And I don't know if you know them, but they're kind of an old-school, super racist white power band. And so I'm like, here, and I'm like, yeah, exactly. I'm like, yay, what did I get myself into? So we're cruising, and all of a sudden, he hangs a hard right into this cornfield. And keep in mind, I had just gotten off stage, and I had, like, long Dwayne Allman hair, and I was wearing a dress. And so I'm like, this is it, you know? Like, I could get out and run, but I don't even know where the hell I am, you know? I'm in a cornfield in Iowa. So turned out we had just taken a shortcut to the house, but they showed up about 10 minutes later, and
Rob comes over to the van.
Yeah, I come over to the van. I'm like,
we got a problem.
I think we might be staying with some weird people tonight. I was like, they're playing Screwdriver, and they're like,
what? We thought it was Arc Welder.
Yeah, we were.
I was like, what's Screwdriver?
That was another like, 90s band.
So
band.
Yeah.
So
anyway,
we walk into the apartment. It's like a townhouse, a one room townhouse. We walk in. It's literally one room. It is two couches facing each other, a coffee table, a little kind of kitchenette area, a bathroom door, and then a ginormous hatred equals purity poster, Hitler poster, and a swastika poster on the wall. And we walk in and we're like, and they're like, hey guys, you want something to drink? They're like, yeah. Like, they're like dorks. They're like the dorkiest skinhead people. Like, we were like, yeah. Right? So we're like, meeting.
Andriana and I are immediately though, van!
So they call the van.
We get to sleep in the van.
So we're like, oh, we forgot stuff out in the van. Let's all go out to the van now, like, to have a meeting. So we're out there, and Spoonie and Adrian are very concerned that me, Rob, and our drummer, Peggy, are
They're
now
gonna get
going
killed.
To be sleeping on the floor, because the guys were like, hey, we can move the couches out and move the coffee table out, and the three of you guys can sleep in between us on the floor in your sleeping bags. And we're like, okay, cool. So we're, like, out in the van. And basically, we're like, Rob, what do you got? And Rob's like, I got keys. I'll put them in between my fingers. And Peggy's like, I got mace. And I'm like, good, all right. And then I was like, I got a Swiss Army knife. So we decide, you know, this is what we're going to do. These guys stay in the van.
Yep.
You had
At that same time, you know, as a band in the 90s, you could only get to the next town on the sales of your merch. And fortunately, gas was less than a dollar a gallon. I don't know how bands survive today. So we had all cash, you know, $1 sales from, you know, records and stuff. So, and you call that little cash box the kitty. So I took the kitty and I tucked it into my panties. And I was like, these skinheads are not getting in here. And I'm like, it's to me safe. I'm safe.
So me, Rob, and Peggy go back in, and these guys stay in the van. And basically, Rob and I get this idea, like, let's just keep them up drinking with us, and that way we'll have less time to have to sleep next to them. Peggy is like, screw that idea, I'm going to sleep. She gets in her sleeping bag and goes to sleep. Me and Robert, like, drinking with these guys, like, just trying to stay up as long as possible so we don't have to, like, be, like, you know, vulnerable, right?
Murdered in your sleep.
Yeah, basically.
But really, they were kind of like mall skinheads, I think. That makes it better, but...
like, you know. Suburbans? I don't know. So, anyway, we finally get to sleep, and we wake up the next morning, and they decide...
Wait.
Oh, what?
Why don't you tell them about why you think they thought we wanted to spend the night with skinheads.
Right. So, the four of us are talking about the story last week, and we were like, why do you think they wanted us... Why do you think they liked us? Why did they offer this, you know, their floor to us? And we realized that we had a song called I Cannot See in Your Eyes. And, but it was spelled icon, I-C-O-N, Nazi. And then in your eyes was spelled like Eichterzender Newbound. It was like in your eyes, like whatever. And it started with a military beat. And the four of us going, ein, zwei, drei, vier. And it was a song about the Holocaust, about like how it was a sad song about how many people died. And we were just like, oh, you know. So that's like why we now think like that they offered this to us. So
that they could share their personal information.
Yeah. So the next morning we wake up.
They took us to the Woolworth counter for breakfast.
And I got to say, in all the years in the band, they're the only people who ever took us out for a meal. Ever. And
yep. Grilled cheese, french fries, and sodas.
Yeah, and so for some reason, I don't remember the Hitler fan posters, but I do remember walking between the cars behind the guys, and the one takes off his jacket, which was probably like a bomber jacket. You would tip him off as a skinhead, and seeing a giant hand-drawn swastika on the back of his t-shirt. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, Iowa, something else.
Yeah. Yep.
So we go in and we eat, and then, you know, they're very nice. They bought all our merch. They paid for our meal. We're like, okay.
And I just thought of something, too. And I remember the really old lady working the Woolworth's lunch counter. She looked at these boys and was like, yeah, it's good to see you again. You guys look soft.
That is with all of their exposed swastikas that she's seeing. So we're leaving there, and we get in the van. We say goodbye to them, and as we're driving away, I crank down the window, and I yell, I'm Jewish! Peggy, drive! Drive!
And that's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.